I was in BC with a few folks that are in the room here, and speaking to a SHARE conference. SHARE does great work, and I just want to touch on, under the umbrella of politics, what are we sort of facing as a movement, as QP members trying to maintain coverage with our current plans, expand coverage for members that don't have it, and as a union that wants to make a contribution to this broader debate under the umbrella of the CLC. Well, I sort of spent a lot of time on this and sent it to Joel and wanted to take what can be a dry subject and really try to motivate folks. And so when I say pension tension rising, it's for a number of reasons. The recession created tension around pension plans, investment losses, etc. Bankruptcies are up and continuing to go up in the United States, and I'll come back to the states later. Given where we live in the world, what happens there matters. Investment returns are down. I don't know if the U.S. economy has entered into a long-term decline. We certainly hope the economy of the U.S. and the markets in the U.S. don't end up where Japan is. 20 years later, despite billions in stimulus efforts, the economy of Japan could at best be called very, very sluggish and in decline. And I personally think, I hope I'm wrong, that the U.S. is in decline as a moral sort of the only superpower, moral force for good. They're in decline that way, and they're increasingly in decline. Still, almost a quarter of the world's gross domestic product is the United States. But, and it's hard to bet against them, they've recovered in the past, but as the U.S. economy goes, we will feel the ripples of that as Canadians. There's huge legislative shortcomings in our country with respect to portability within and amongst private plans. Ask yourself this question. Will your child or your young nieces and nephews have the work experience of your parents or you, one employer for the bulk of your adult life? And if not, there is huge legislative shortcomings that don't exist in the European Union and elsewhere within and amongst private plans. And then interest rates and demographics. There's no third option in pension plans. It's our contribution rates and our experiences within plans and the interest rates that can derive returns on investment. If we're into an historical period of record low interest rates and we know the demographic reality of our country, ask yourself this question. What was the mix of current employees to retirees in your plan 10 years ago, and what is it today? And what will it be 5-6 years from now? Our National Executive Board heard from a demographer a couple of weeks ago at a session that we had, and the birth rate in Canada within 5 years will not provide sustenance of the labor force. It'll be totally dependent upon immigration. That has consequences, so we'll have an increasing number of workers taking their well-earned pensions. Will they be backstopped by the same size of public service or not? The next slide, very quickly, the 60s game plan never materialized. So we have CPP coverage, it's wide, it's indexed, it's secure, it's fully portable. Those are maximums there, $11,575. The old age security guaranteed income supplement, secure, universal, just not very generous. That's a maximum as well. If you maxed out, which few Canadians do, it's 40% income replacement on the YMPE, which is 46 and change. Very, very few Canadians max out at that, add those numbers together. What is it, $17,000 or $18,000? The third leg of the retirement income stool doesn't exist for most Canadians. 11 million and climbing out of a workforce of, what, 17.5 million, have no workplace pension plan. And the number of plans that exist in workplaces is declining through manufacturing job loss and aggressive bargaining. When Bell Canada, when the Toronto Globe and Mail, when the largest newspaper and oldest newspaper in North America, La Presse, have driven deals where new employees will be defined contribution, after decades of defined benefit, that pressure, I don't see it decreasing. And I think this is a 2007 tax year, but it's typical. 31% of Canadians no contributions to RSP, nothing, because they can't. They haven't got the means. They're living paycheck to paycheck. And the median RSP in Canada would generate purchasing an annuity at age 65 or 66, given our demographics, would yield a pittance in monthly return. As Nancy said, everyone agrees that there's a problem. They've all got different solutions for it. Solutions. So I won't dwell on that very long. Joel's talked about that, and it's a sensible roadmap that the CLC is charting with some very strong allies around it. It's interesting to me that we can shut down Parliament and, for 2 or 3 months, but the Prime Minister cannot act on a call from the Premiers last August in Regina for a national summit on pensions. That would not be an easy conversation room for us to be in, because it's not all gain, gain, gain. A whole bunch of workers are going to have to start paying more or paying some for increased pension coverage. But there's a reason Harper will not provide that audience, because our arguments, in my view, are very, very strong. So we'll have to go at it, as Joel said, the other ways. Expect resistance and inertia. Provincial-federal wrangling. The kind of amendment we're seeking to the CPP requires the support of 2/3 of the provinces representing 2/3 of the population. And getting an answer out of the Minister of Finance in Ontario, a straight answer, is difficult. And the Quebec thing, I believe Quebec's open to some of this, but if you can't grab one or both of Quebec and Ontario, this gig is up. The pension finance industry, they will be vicious in their resistance for what we're proposing, because it costs them fees. Debt deficit hysteria, this is more of a micro comment or short-term comment. We're heading back into a movie that I've been to at least twice in my working life, and that is everything under the rubric of debt deficit hysteria. It doesn't matter that Canada's debt-to-GDP ratios are amongst the lowest in the developed world. This won't be a rational debate. The movement of Mr. Day into Treasury Board in finance is a clear indication of, if we don't think we've seen the true Harper, we've seen snippets of him in the last 4 years, you're going to see it on March the 4th with the federal budget. And maybe the most vexing question, the absence of a pension champion. I was on a sort of business news network with Catherine Swift, and Keith Ambasht here, the champion for this Canadian Supplementary Pension Plan. I use the phrase, the absence of a pension champion, at one time in this 20-minute show. And his parting remark was interesting. He says he has a picture in his office. He's the dean of the Rotman School of Business, a picture of Tommy Douglas, because he can enunciate publicly who the champion of Medicare was. Never in power federally, Mr. Douglas, certainly in power as a premier, but viewed by all as the champion of Medicare. And Ambasht said, who is the champion on pensions? And I don't believe we have one yet, frankly, and we need one. And then big picture, this impacts on us as Canadians. The U.S. is in decline, morally and economically, in my view. China, India rising, the largest economies in the world by 2030, less than 20 years from now, will not be the United States. Declining union density in North America and elsewhere in the developed world, but I'll just speak about North America, and there's a huge correlation historically and today between unions and defined benefit pension plans. If we can't win this national state argument, and I guess we'll always keep trying to negotiate in the private and public sector pension coverage, progressive pension coverage, but when the union density falls under double digits, not private sector, the whole shebang in the United States, that's got huge consequences. World gross domestic product last year, $45 trillion, about 13.5 of which is the United States. They're still huge, but they're declining as the preeminent world superpower economically. And Mr. Obama's moves last week were not just petulance. Bringing the Glass-Steagall Act provisions, re-regulating the finance industry, separating commercial and retail banking, there is off the balance sheet around the planet $600 trillion in derivatives. Some of them, many of them, held by institutions that also engage in retail banking. So in 1987, there was less than $1 trillion in derivatives around the world, bundled up, packaged up debt. Today, there is $600 trillion. None of the stimulus and the reinvestment in the banking industry, which I think Mr. Obama had to do, none of that relates to this. And a lot of it's day trading, and a lot of it's, I've heard all the explanations to it, but understand this. We understand this as workers. The right wing will socialize their losses whenever and wherever possible and privatize their profits. As sure as the rain will fall in January in Ottawa. Anyways, let's go to questions. This is a very exciting file, and we have a huge opportunity here.